Thanks for joining, everyone. When you join the call, you are on mute, but we will begin it in just a couple more minutes. We still hear a lot of beeps coming on. Thanks. Joining the call. We're going to start momentarily. Good morning and welcome to the call this morning. This is Kate Breslin at the Schuyler Center for Analysis and Advocacy, and I'm very pleased to welcome all of you to our phone call that was put together by the Ready for Kindergarten, Ready for College campaign to take a look at the new pre-K funding in the New York State budget. And we're joined with our Ready for Kindergarten, Ready for College partners from the Center for Children's Initiatives, CCI, as well as the Alliance for Quality Education, as we put this on for you all. So I'll draw your attention to what you should have received, and if you're on the call today, then you would have received it yesterday, the links to the State Department of Education presentation that we thought provided a great overview of the new pre-K program, as well as the what we're calling our key elements document that we provided a link to yesterday. So we hope those will be helpful as you kind of try and get a better handle on the program. So the purpose of today's call is to provide an overview of the key elements of this new funding and highlight both the opportunities and challenges it presents. We also aim to solicit your questions, which we will offer to the State Department of Education and others to inform the development of the RFP. And we also aim to encourage community-based organizations to work with your school districts to apply for the funding. So I want to also, though, point out that we are going to do our best to answer as many questions as possible, but keep in mind, this is what we know now. So the final budget was passed at the beginning of April, and I really want to mention that we are very appreciative. Many of you have been doing advocacy to get attention to and funding for universal pre-kindergarten for many, many years. And this year was a watershed year in the amount of funding that was dedicated to pre-K. Now, as we will discuss over the course of this conversation, and I'm sure going forward, there are a lot of challenges and concerns about it, but it's really a testament to the hard work of many of you on the phone, and many others who aren't, to really keep pushing on this. So thank you. We've reached out to as many informants as we can to understand this new program that was passed last month, and we'll share as much as we know. We're also eager to understand your questions and concerns, and we'll work to convey them to the right places. So I say all of that as a sort of a disclaimer. We are not ready to get into the weeds, and we are eager, though, to help be a bridge between folks who are in communities all across the state. And we have over 90 people registered for this this conference call right now. So we know there's interest from across the state. We're eager to help understand what your questions and concerns are and then move them to the right folks in Albany and elsewhere. So I'll mention that the conference call is being recorded. And to begin with, Nancy Colbin from the Center for Children's Initiatives and the Ready for Kindergarten, Ready for College campaign will give an overview of the new funding, and then we'll take your questions. When the time comes for questions, we will ask you to dial *6, and we'll remind you again of that. So until then, you are all muted. We had such a large group, as I said, over 90, that we knew we needed to put participants on mute until we're ready to take calls. So when the time comes for questions, we'll ask you to dial *6, and then you'll be prompted to follow the instructions to get in the queue. When you do ask a question, we urge you to identify yourself so that we have a sense of who you are, because we're not able to know that with our system here. So with that, I am very excited to introduce Nancy Colbin.
Good morning, everyone, and I just want to reiterate what Kay said about how thrilled we are that we have such a diverse group of individuals on the call today who bring so many different perspectives to some very important work going forward. And what we're going to try and do is review some of the information that we sent you as a kind of framework and help to explain it a little bit to the extent that we understand it. And no, just a reminder, this is really a work in progress, and some things we won't have answers to until the RFP is actually out. So with that, I'm really going to follow the framework of our key elements. So if many of you have that in front of you, that's very helpful. I think that everyone knows that we had a record-breaking amount of funding this year for the expansion of pre-K with an investment of $340 million. Of which $300 million is set aside for New York City and $40 million available for the rest of the state. That's very different than the usual balance and allocation of funds. And one of the things that I want to say so that everybody knows, we're really focused today a lot on helping individuals and organizations outside of New York City to really pay attention to and understand what the component pieces are. As you can well imagine, given all of the attention in the city, there's tremendous amount of work underway already. There were RFPs out even before the budget language passed. There's been a plan produced by the mayor. So we have a lot of things that have really moved forward in some significant steps that I'll refer to a little later. I think everyone knows, or people are beginning to understand, we now have a very complex pre-K funding picture. It would be too simple that we had one funding strategy, you know, across the board. So we have some remaining programs, very few, that are funded under the original targeted, previously called experimental pre-K. And we understand that it's operated primarily by about three BOCES. Then we have the Universal Pre-K Program, which was enacted in 1997, and those of us who've been doing advocacy and policy know the ups and downs of the funding, but now there is $385 million that is available primarily for Part Day programs, with about 440 districts participating and over 100,000 children enrolled. that money is totally protected. That money has not gone away. It is very much there. And districts will still have, their allocations are out already, will have the funding to move forward. Last year, we had a new program enacted, which is now called Priority Pre-K, and this was primarily focused on expanding full day, but there were options to do part day. It was a very modest investment of $25 million, and it was a competitive grant program. 26 districts were awarded. The eligibility to participate, to apply, was designated high-need school districts in a list developed by the State Education Department. We understand that there'll be about 5,800 children served with this expanded funding. So we turn now to where we are today. And before I do that, I just want to say we actually have a fifth pre-K program, which is preschool special ed, and there are some four-year-olds obviously enrolled in preschool special ed. The new program is being referred to as Innovative Pre-K. We're not sure if that's the name that will officially stick, but for our purposes today, we use that name just so we could find a way to talk about it. The funding is for full school day, and that's defined as at least 5 hours. It's open to all districts through a competitive grant. The RFP is a work in progress, we understand, and we know that SED is trying to move as quickly as possible to release that RFP, but those of us who've been there for a while and seen how long it takes, it's a complicated process for agencies to go through to get all the approvals and get the RFP out. The goal is to have children enrolled by September. And they are doing everything possible to try and meet that goal. So with that, let me just reiterate what are some of the really new pieces, because this is really another framework for funding, and it is quite different than what preceded in some ways, and in some ways it's similar. So the legislation, the budget language talks about a regional structure, and that regional structure follows the economic development districts designated by the governor. And the only purpose that we understand for that is that if there is an oversubscription for services in a particular geographic area, the DOB will be able to decide who gets priority. We have no information that it means that funding could be moved from one designated region to another. The other piece is that the $40 million is not allocated by region. It's that it really is related to when applications come in and what the demand is. New York City is its own region, and that money of $300 million is protected, in effect. $300 million will go to New York City, but the other allocations are open at this point. In terms of an issue that we all care a lot about and are concerned about, which has to do with ensuring that programs are of high quality and children are receiving the kinds of early learning opportunities that we all want them to have, there is quality language in the Innovative Pre-K, there's quality language in Priority Pre-K, and there's quality language in the Universal Pre-K regulations. And I think if you look at the presentation to the regions, it clearly shows you that while some different words are used, there's consistent framework that is looking at teacher qualifications, curriculum, class size, environment, parent engagement, et cetera. And so I think it's important for us to understand that what was really different in the Priority Pre-K application was that SED asked school districts to do a self-assessment around how they were meeting these various quality targets, and those who got funded were needing to put in place a quality improvement plan. The other piece that's really important and core to quality is the teacher qualifications. And what the new innovative, we have all we, in terms of our work through Ready for K and our other policy work, support that teachers in early childhood programs should have the appropriate certification of birth to second grade. This language is more open than that. It allows for the certification that is approved within state ed regulations, which could also be the N through 6. And the other piece that it does is that programs that operate out of the public school system had, if they hired staff, had 5 years to meet the full certification standards. Right now, any new staff that's hired must meet these certification standards within 3 years, so that by the year 2017, both people that had been previously employed in outside of the public school system where certification is already fully required would have to meet those standards. The other big important piece, and we're still trying to get some more clarity and understand this fully, is they talk about this as a reimbursement program. And while that may sound like it's not anything different, it actually looks to us like it's a different payment structure, and that districts may be required to upfront the money for up to a year, with the possibility in the second year receiving a 25% advance. That's very different than what we have now, which is that for UPK, it's 50% upfront payment and then reimbursement requests based on expenditures. And with priority pre-K, it's a 25% advance. This is something that we know can be very challenging for school districts, obviously, and we continue to look and explore, be sure that, and see if there are any ways to help impact what's in that language and how it will be implemented. The other really significant change is that until this new program, districts received an allocation in UPK based on a number of need factors that were pretty much aligned with the Foundation Aid funding formula, relationship to need and wealth and several other factors. And that rate for UPK sites has changed over the years depending on where we were in pre-K implementation and the assessment of the Foundation Aid formula. For priority pre-K, those same allocation rates applied, but they were doubled in effect for districts that were successful in winning the funding through priority pre-K. With the new program, there are two rates across the state. That's the huge change. And the rates are based on whether there is a fully certified teacher in the classroom. So with a teacher with a BA working towards certification, it's $7,000 for 7,000 per child. For programs with certified teachers, it is $10,000. And so this is a significant change in the framing, and we know that it has a differential impact on different districts because the UPK rates, for example, have ranged from 2,700 to above 6,000, although very few districts are at that higher level. In our analysis, we think that the super vast majority, both of children and districts, are in that 3,000 to 5,000 range for part day. So this is an important change and one that can be very significant. There is new language around supplanting and supplementing. Again, there's always been language around supplantation, but in this case, it broadened the definition of what counted for supplementation and allows still for supplementing existing programs. So for those who are familiar with the variety of funding in the early childhood community, there are programs that receive child care funding and Head Start funding. That is a mix. Head Start is federal. Child care funding is a mix of federal, state, and local in some cases. But until this legislation was passed, the only children that were considered served in the UPK program were those who had a preschool special ed designation. So it allowed for a lot of appropriate blending and braiding of funding. So now the supplantation language applies to any local, state, or federal money serving four-year-olds. This is, again, another area where we're trying to explore and understand more its full implications. I think one of the other changes is that charter schools are now eligible to apply directly. Up until now, they could, of course, have pre-K programs, but they needed to do it in partnership with a community-based organization. So now they would become part of the district's application plan. And so the other significant change is kind of what happens around the district's application and who else can apply directly to the state education department. So this spells out a process clearly where the district must submit a plan, which they've always had to do, and it has to include the broad range that they've reached out to the broad range of eligible service providers, and they have to notify programs that apply to be part of the district's plan 2 weeks in advance of their submission of their response to the RFP. So they have to notify programs whether they've been accepted or not accepted. And programs that have not been included in the district's plan can apply directly, independently, to the state. And so, in effect, it would be a competition for the resources from that particular region outside of New York City. In New York City, it would be the New York City $300 million. It would come out of that $300 million designation. So I hope I've said that clearly enough for people to understand, but we may have some questions that come up later. We are not clear whether the question has come up about a school district that would not choose to participate, but other early childhood service providers in the community would want to put in an application. Is that possible? There's nothing in the budget language that would make clear that that is possible, so we're still trying to figure out whether that's an opportunity. The other piece that I just wanted to say is that in the budget language, it was designated as 2 years of funding at $340 million. Part of what we want to be able to do is to show and document that there's a significant and substantial demand beyond the $40 million that has been allocated upstate. And so it's really important that we do everything we can to help support districts in applying and letting and understanding the demand, and also understanding the potential roadblocks. And we, through our work at Ready for K, want to follow up with districts and community-based organizations and learn more about the challenges and document the challenges as we go forward, because we think that's really, really important. And finally, I want to say, because I want to leave time for questions, they do refer to a five-year plan in the budget language. We had a five-year plan around UPK in 1997, but it's there. It proposes to implement a statewide universal full-day pre-K program, and we hope that that becomes a basis of absolutely reaching that target. So I hope that this has helped to at least highlight what we think are some of the key questions, and we'd like to really turn it over now to really have substantial time for Q&A.
Thank you. Thank you, Nancy. That was great. And so we do have a few questions that folks emailed us in advance of the call. And we are exploring new technology. What I thought I'd do is we'll start with the couple of questions that we received in advance of today's call, and then we will ask you all to, but you can start now. You can start, you know, kind of putting yourself into the queue now, and you do that by pressing *6, and then you'll be prompted to press 1 once you're in that menu, and that'll put you in the queue to ask questions, and then we'll be able to open it up. So I think some of this may be have already been answered in Nancy's presentation and in the materials that we sent. But I'll start with, what are some of the key factors that would make a pre-existing UPK program have greater chances of being awarded this grant? Nancy, did you want to?
Say who you are. This is Jasmine from AQE. Since the RFP has not come out, we really can't say for sure right now what key factors you can do to make your grant more appealing to SED or to get a higher score. We'll be able to have more information about that once the RFP is released from SED.
Okay, and then there was another question. We are a CBO, a community-based organization, partnering with a school district. Do we apply with a consolidated application, or do we apply individually?
CBOs should be applying with the school district in their area. If the school district denies the CBO from being a part of the consolidated application, then the CBO has the option of applying directly to SED.
And then we had a question, is this grant in addition to what has been allocated for UPK in New York?
So yes, this is new funding that's available. Before UPK was $385 million, and now we have a new $340 million. So yes, this is new money.
And is this the same full-day grant that was proposed in 2013 and passed last year for $25 million?
So the money last year was called Priority Pre-K and was $25 million. This new money is now Highly Innovative Pre-K, which is the new $340 million. So this is not the same as the money that was allocated in last year's budget. This is a brand-new grant, a brand-new funding stream. And now we're going to start going through the queue for our Q&A.
Hi, this is Kathy in Yonkers, New York. I have a question regarding what you spoke about with the special ed programs. Is that going to take the place of the funding we already received from the state ed department, or is that in addition?
Kathy, can you identify where you're from?
Sure. My name is Kathy Heron. I'm from Lika Watts in Yonkers, New York.
Great. Thank you.
Did you get my question, or you want me to repeat it?
Yes. Jasmine from AQE is here. And
it's an addition to Yes.
Okay. That's good news. Thank you.
Sure. We're working our technology to get to the next question.
This is Jane Brown at the Child Care Resource and Referral Agency in Rockland. If I have more than one question, should I ask it now or wait?
No, absolutely, yes. Go ahead.
Ask all? Okay.
Go ahead and ask as many as you need to.
Okay, thank you. This is to go back to if a CBO or some entity is denied as part of the district's application, and the denial would be based on the inappropriateness of that CBO or entity being able to fulfill the universal pre-kindergarten or the innovative pre-kindergarten. You probably don't know this, but would we assume then that that would be picked up by state ed in their application that they submit themselves? I just have some concerns about everybody applying for this, and they really should not be providing the services.
Yes, so when SED does look at an application that's applied directly to them, they will consider all of those elements. It's just a matter of checks and balances that if a CBO is being denied for reasons that it shouldn't be, they have the option of now going directly to SED. It does not guarantee that they will get the money. It just means they just have an option of applying separately, but they may also be denied because of the same reasons they were denied by the school district.
Okay. And then I notice in the Regents presentation, it talks about the application process must take into account any record of violation. So would we assume then that we're, I guess the RFP might have a section where we would put in there anything that we know about an entity that has some kind of violation? Or I know this is minutia and you may not know all this, but
yeah. So, yeah, that's a very intricate detail that we don't know the specifics of just yet, but we just know it's something that will be taken into consideration when choosing to award grants.
Okay. The next one is about the classrooms based on the certification or not. So it's just kind of a hypothesis. If a program has three classrooms, one has a certified teacher, the other two have the BA, we would assume that the classroom with the certified teacher, the children in that classroom would get the $10,000 per, and the children in the other two then would receive $7,000 per. So the program may not get the same amount per child.
That's the correct assumption, yes.
Okay. And do we know if the certification is based on permanent or provisional or both?
We don't know the specifics of that yet. We can assume that probably based on at least provisional, which is the initial certification. Does Nancy or Betty, do you want to chime in for this question?
I just got a call that they were on mute, so I'm going to try and.
Okay.
Betty and Nancy, are you off mute?
Okay, great, great, great. I was very frustrated.
Sorry about that. It was not on purpose.
I know. It's all learning this new technology, and we didn't know how to reach it. So that's.
So did you hear the question?
Yeah, but which question are we? You repeat it again, just because I got totally distracted.
I think we was around. Go ahead, Jane.
It was about whether if the $10,000 is applicable to both provisional and, of course, permanent certification.
Yeah, that's a level of detail that we're going to need to get further clarity on.
Okay.
They talk about meeting certification requirements. So some of this is also, you know, continuing to talk to SED as they think through these complicated questions.
Okay. And then I have a question about the inspections. It's required twice per year. It says either district, state ed, OSEA, all that. So if the district determines that they're going to be responsible for visiting the sites, does that also mean that one of the other entities has to do at least one visit?
Yes. I think that what they're trying to do is come up with a common protocol, and that these, like, details, Jane, will get really worked through. I think the idea is that it's, you know, the inspections are so different for different parts of our system, so they were trying to do this broad category there so that there would be two inspections during the year.
And I think this is, as Nancy said, some of these are things we don't know yet, but for those, all of you, Jane and others on the phone, to the extent you have a position or a recommendation or a suggestion, you know, that I think that's valid, and you should be thinking about how do you weigh in, and we can, of course, all of us on the phone can help with how to make that happen, but weighing in as these policies are developed is very important.
Yes, and I would say email us, too, so we know the questions. The more that we kind of see the consolidation of questions, it will be very helpful as we're continuing to do our work as well.
Okay, and my only last question, thank you. My only last question is, has anyone heard anything about how the innovative would be determined by child lottery? If we have to already know the children before we'd even, during the application process, we've already done the lotteries for the school district in Rockland for UPK, so anything you know on that process?
So, Jane, again, I think these are like really, you have such a good handle of the implementation challenges, and I think that we continue to face those. It's one thing with this broad legislation, and then the devil's in the details about how all this works. So these are really important questions to surface and get to SED.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks for your time.
Just so folks know, we're working through questions on the phone queue. I know that somebody just brought me some emailed questions. We'll get to the email questions if we exhaust the phone queue. So if you'd like to get in the phone queue, please do.
Okay, my question was, and I'm sorry, I tuned into the conversation a little bit late. This is Kate Farrell in Catskill School District. Do we have a time frame, estimated time frame, when the RFP will be let?
No.
Not happy news, but thank you.
And that's another area that I will say that we have, you know, as with last year's funding, we are, of course, urging and trying to be supportive of the Department of Education to get it out as rapidly as possible. And, the more that they hear from any of you who want to, you know, encourage that, I think the better.
And I just would want to add that in our conversations with them, we need to give them all the ammunition to keep moving it as quickly as possible. They are, the folks there are really committed to trying to get this out. And I heard on a call I was on yesterday that there is a draft. And then some of you who've been through this know that the approval process is arduous to get an RFP out. And there are a lot of very complicated things in this RFP, unfortunately. So we need to keep the pressure on at all levels of government.
Okay, and I did have a follow-up question. I understand about the school district approaching other providers who may have programs that they would be interested in having funded. Is there any guidance on the kind of language that needs to be used to approach and get a formal acceptance or denial so that that process might be facilitated ahead of time of the RFP coming out?
Well, you have to do an RFP. A lot of districts have sample RFPs. I'm sure that we could help get you some. If they've been doing RFPs, a number of districts over the years, because UPK mandates that 10%, that you reach out to community-based organizations, and that unless you get a waiver, 10% of the services have to be in CBOs.
Right. I'm sorry. I don't think I was clear with my question. I apologize.
Okay. Sorry.
In approaching our partner districts,
Partner districts. I'm sorry. Okay.
Or partner agencies. I'm not asking them to respond. I'm presuming that they will join with the district application.
Right.
The question is it sufficient if I were at this time to approach not-for-profit or community agencies to solicit whether or not they chose to participate? Can I do that now ahead of this new RFP being let so that we can have that piece in preparation for our response to the state?
The answer to that is simple. Absolutely yes. We would encourage people to do that.
And there's no particular language or issue that has to be in their response or in our approach?
Not that we know of beyond what we've shared with you and what when you look at what was presented to the regents. So
thank
that's
you.
All we know.
Thank you.
Sorry about the confusion.
That's okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Hi, this is Denise Ferreira from Middle Country Central School District.
Welcome.
Hi, thank you. I have two questions, possibly three, depending on how you answer one of them. First of all, will the money be restricted to certain districts like the priority pre-K was? I know you said that the you know, the economic development districts, and you were talking about that, but I wasn't clear if that was going to be, you know, only these districts can apply.
No, all districts can apply.
Okay. And the second question I have is that we have a truly true universal pre-K. Everybody in this district is eligible for pre-K. And if we do that and we decide to go for these innovative pre-K funds to add full-day classes, how do we determine which of our children get into that? Is it a lottery or could we do it by needs? Because we don't have a lottery right now. Everybody who comes in comes in. But if we want to do this full day because that's the need in our district, people are asking us for full day, how do we determine who gets into those classes? Is that going to be a requirement or is that just a district decision?
I think that's one of those things that we don't have an answer to and that needs to, this is reiterating what we said before. It's really important that SED hear these questions so that the RFP is not only clear but hopefully does things that makes this really viable and workable for districts.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. All right, and my last question is, being said that already that we're truly universal, we do partner with three different agencies right now. We have a Head Start program, a 4410, and a private child care center. And most of our families who go to those CBOs are ones who are looking for the full-day option. We would like to apply for these monies to put the full-day option in our school district. Now, do I still have to open it up to the CBOs or give them the notice that we got the grant, or can I just keep that money to have the classrooms that are full day in our school district?
We believe, but it's still not 100% certain. We believe that you're going to have to open it up to everyone.
So if we get the full day monies, even though we already partner and we already add our 10%, we would still have to open it up for those monies.
Well, you know, we will make a note of that question because it's unclear how this is going to work out with the existing, with the existing money and the new money and how that's going to play out. But we cannot give you an answer right now with certainty. So it's a good question. It's a good point to raise, though. It's one of those things that needs to be fleshed out in the process.
Okay. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, everybody, for these questions. It's really helpful, and we are compiling them. That's part of the reason. That's actually the reason we're recording this call.
Hi, this is Jeannie Harris from Rochester. We were working with some of our suburban districts that aren't doing UPK yet, and actually I was going to ask the question that's already been asked about when we thought the RFP might be available. Those districts, the districts that we're talking to, are both very shy about the idea of perhaps a September implementation. We tried to push the idea that, well, we could still do it in January if you think that that's not a possibility. So you said, Nancy, that the goal is a September implementation. Do we know if there'll be flexibility with that?
Well, <I know. laughs>
this is one of those, you know, whatever questions that, you know, last year with Priority Pre-K, they were going to start in September, and they didn't release the RFP until until very late.
Yeah.
SED, I think, is trying very hard. They're not moving processes there. Obviously, we all know is not quick. I think that the more capacity we can have in place by September from our efforts to get more money and resources to continue to expand pre-K, it will be extraordinarily helpful and obviously, of course, important to the children to have that access.
Sure.
Whether they'll allow the additional, it always seems to end up that they do when they get to a place where they really have to. So we don't, you know, this is another one of those important questions, but we don't really know the answer to.
Sure.
It's why the folks that have to make this operational, raising these questions is so important and helpful.
I remember the city school district, when they were applying for the priority pre-K funding last year, they were working on prepping their grant docs before the RFP came out. So what guidance, or can you give guidance to say, what should we be putting together now to help them with the process?
Well, I mean, in New York City, we had our, because we had a process in place. So, I mean, I would say even in Rochester, you have a lot of experience.
We do.
And so our message to everyone is we don't have all of the answers here, but if you can, get started now. Start this process and so that you're ready to turn on a dime when the RFP actually comes out. I mean, you know, the city, because of all of the pressure and the visibility and the entire hierarchy of the mayor's new office focused on really making this work, we've got, you know, amazing progress underway. They've already, you know, identified the schools, identified the CBOs, and have got a second RFP out and have an RFP out to the charter schools, et cetera. And so they've started the enrollment process.
Wow. Okay. Thanks.
It's nice to have a mayor fully in saying this is a priority. It does make a difference.
Nancy, absolutely. Part of what Nancy's saying is I think, you know, we don't know when the RFP is going to be out, but all the things that you've had to do in the past to, as you've developed your response to previous years' pre-K programs, are of course good starting places.
Sure.
Absolutely, and it's all, you know, it's there when you look at it. I think the Regents piece is kind of helpful in laying out that framework, what the expectations might be.
Okay.
So we're going to move on to the next question.
Hi, I'm from Nassau County, Long Island, New York. And first of all, we got the wrong telephone number to get into the conference. You said that it was going to be recorded, so I have no idea. We just got into the last part of it, just the Q&A part. We got the wrong telephone number. So I wondered
Sorry about that. You know, the materials, we are working off of all the materials that we're linked to. So did you have a question you wanted to have answered?
Yes, I did. I wondered about...
Sorry, your name and your organization?
My name is Jill Rooney, and it's Harbor Child Care. And we have four districts that we do UPK with. They're half days, and they want to go to full time. And so I wondered if there's any money available for the part-time days if they don't get any money for full-time. And I also wanted to ask about the difference in ratio between SED and OCFS, because it makes a very big difference in the budget.
The issue around part-time, this is designated as full-time funding. We have to see what comes out, and you can expand a part day to full day, but this is to, so in that sense, it is to create full-time slots.
Okay, and also, if they have 55 slots, most of the districts I work with, can they increase the number of children served, or is that just, you know, in stone?
What do you mean? No, the number of children served, presumably they'd be applying to serve an additional number of children.
Okay, because each of these four districts all were granted 55 children only in the part-time, and they want to go to full-time, but they can increase the number of children served as well?
So
they can apply to increase. The difference here is that those were allocated numbers of children. That doesn't exist now. Now it's a competitive grant. So how far, how many children you think you can serve is all districts can decide how they want to apply.
So this is a different program than UPK and the priority pre-K that was enacted last year. So it's a whole different process and a whole new pot of money.
Okay, and just where can I get the first part of this conference? When will it be available?
The best thing to do would be to review the materials that were linked to in the email that we sent.
Yes.
And that's what the presentation was based on, was those materials, those two sets of materials.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. And you're also welcome to email us, going forward at info@scaany.org. We'll be continuing to collect questions and concerns there. info@scaany.org.
The questions will likely not be answered, but they will be directed to SED to help inform the RFP.
Absolutely. We'll be compiling them to share with the folks who are working on the RFP.
All right. Thank you.
Hello, this is Sharon Smith from Kendall Schools.
Hi.
I'm calling for rural schools. As you know, the collaboration of the consolidated application proposes unique challenges to the rural school. We have limited access to CBOs. Many of us don't have public libraries or even a museum would be miles and miles away. I'm hoping that there would be provisions and advocacy on behalf of the rural schools.
Well, I think that one of the things that's always been there with UPK is that you can get a waiver if you can document that you've done the outreach. And we would hope, I think it's another thing that we should be sure gets to SED that they're taking care of, to be sure that we're dealing with the unique situations in some rural communities, which has always been the case since UPK legislation passed.
Thank you very much.
Hi, this is Kathy Herron from Lincoln Watson Yonkers. I spoke to you, I think that was the first question, but I want to build on that one. We're a 4410 integrated program, and the special ed children come a full day. We also have contracted with Yonkers for many years for the half-day UPK. Now, if they include us again, will that include all children, or will it just include the typical children? Because you mentioned, we talked before that special ed students are also part of this grant. So,
all I wanted to say was that I think the question around special ed students is special ed students are clearly eligible if they only have a part day of services. And kind of this is another one of those, how will this new language impact on how the district can integrate preschool special ed children? We don't have an absolute answer to that.
So it's you don't know, if the district can just say this is for your, your typical part of your integrated class, or is that allowed?
Yeah.
So Betty, you don't know.
Betty Holcomb wants to add some comment here.
Sure.
This is Betty Holcomb at CCI. I just want to add the thought, which I'm guessing you're aware of and other people on the phone are aware of, that when universal pre-kindergarten was created, one of the big ideas about it was that it created a general education program for some of the children that might be enrolled in special education, that they could have a less restrictive environment and be included in a classroom with a more diverse group of children.
Right.
And so that remains, I think, a high priority. With the new language around the supplementing and supplanting and sort of figuring out how you put a full day of services together, it's not really clear to us in this exactly how that would work, but I would say it's a huge goal at SED and the regions to blend the funding when they can.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Hello?
Go ahead.
Hi. This is Cindy Stocker from Central Valley School District, and I believe my question has been answered, but just for clarification, if you don't mind, I'll repeat it. This, am I understanding correctly that this is new money and it doesn't, it's not tied to the grant, the priority pre-K grant from last year? So
yeah.
Different
process, new money, different money, different program, different process.
Okay, so we can apply again then.
Absolutely.
Okay, yeah. Correct.
Please do.
Well, and the other one still exists.
Correct.
I mean, it will continue to be funded, those 26 districts that got funding, assuming that they meet the requirements.
Okay, well, that's good news. Thank you.
It looks like we have a couple more questions before we close.
Hello?
Hi.
Did somebody, we think
yes,
we
opened the line? Hi, it's Ann Mitchell.
Oh, hi, Ann.
In Greene County. I have two questions. This new innovative pre-K, are BOCES allowed to offer this pre-K?
Well, insofar as, BOCES are considered districts, if I'm not mistaken. So, we don't see any reason that they wouldn't be allowed to, but we should clarify that.
Okay, my second question is, can school districts jointly offer the new pre-K program?
Like two different school districts?
Together.
Yes.
Well,
it's a big question that we're not sure that we have a real answer to, Ann, and how that would work. I think it's really an important one to raise with SED.
Yeah.
It's extremely important because school districts are urged to share, consolidate, more efficient. So this would be an opportunity to do that.
We totally agree. This is just sort of what we see, you know, this legislation was, as always, this
so
budget
you're saying,
language.
Ann, it seems like a good idea to you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I think that it's good. Yeah, right. It's good to sort of, you know, reiterate those questions from your school district hat.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, we have one more question.
Hi, this is Video Claro. I'm calling from Andrus Early Learning Center.
Hi.
I have two questions. One is, if the district we are in, and we are a CBO, if that district chose not to do an RFP, can we then independently pursue an RFP?
Yeah.
We don't have an answer to that. There's nothing in the budget language that would suggest that you could, but we're trying to get some more clarification. Again, I think this is a good question to go into SED to know that people have that question and are interested.
So that was one of the questions we did bring up to SED, and they are aware of it and are considering it, and hopefully the RFP will address that.
Okay, thank you for that, and I have another question. Can we go to outside districts for the opportunity to collaborate other than the district we are in?
I think it's happened already under UPK.
Is that right?
Yeah. So it depends on where you're providing the services. Who are the children that you're enrolling?
But let's say I would be serving the children from that district, which is outside of my home district, then you would say that that's a possibility?
I think that's another question we should articulate.
It's another question. It's been done already, but that doesn't mean we don't want another question to be asked.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you, too. And thanks, everybody, for participating. I want to make sure we keep our promise and let you off the phone in our 1 hour of allotted time. But I want to just say thanks so much for participating. And please feel free to send, if you have kind of questions that you think of after we hang up that we might not have captured, if you want to clarify concern or a question or amplify it in some way, please do that. You can send those to info at scaany.org. And we won't be answering those questions. We'll be kind of compiling them and using them to inform our policymakers. And we look forward to working with you as we go forward. Thanks very much. Bye.